The next thing is blending confidence with humility. It's earning the right to be confident through putting in work during the unseen hours. It's getting repetitions. It is earning the right to be confident, but brushing that with a massive stroke of humility to the point that you stay open to coaching, you stay open to feedback, and no matter how good you are, you believe you can still get better. And that was one of the things that separates a Kobe Bryant or a Tom Brady.
Welcome to What's Next with Eric Wood, where we will prepare you to make your what's next in life your best yet. Our next guest is Alan Stein Jr., and Alan has worked with the highest performing athletes on the planet, including NBA superstars Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and Kobe Bryant, as a championship level performance coach. He is also a keynote speaker, teaching proven strategies to raise the game of your life and your business. We are all going to grow from listening to Alan's words on this podcast. If you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you tune in weekly. And also, if you haven't already, go to Amazon and order my book, Tackle What's Next, and the link to that is in the show notes. Thanks and enjoy. Alan, welcome to the show, brother.
Oh, man, it's so great to be with you. I'm a huge fan of yours and a huge fan of your show, and this will be a fun conversation.
I appreciate that, and I got the pleasure of being a guest on your show. We got to connect that way, so everyone go check that out. Alan has an incredible podcast called Raise Your Game, and it's awesome. His books are excellent. Check those out, but let's dig in to your story a little bit. What led you to get into the world of performance coaching?
So basketball was my first identifiable passion, and I vividly remember falling in love with the game at 5 years old when my parents signed me up for my first recreation basketball team. And I'm so grateful that here, 40 plus years later, basketball is still a major pillar of my life. And, you know, I spent the first portion of my life as a very dedicated basketball player, was fortunate enough to play all the way through the collegiate level, played at Elon. It was Elon College at the time. It's now Elon University down in North Carolina. And when the writing was on the wall that I didn't have what it took to play professionally, I knew that I wanted to stay connected to the game. And at the latter part of high school and throughout college, I started to develop an equal love for performance training, which at the time was really just called strength and conditioning. But strength, conditioning, mindset, nutrition, fitness, I was just enamored by that stuff. And when I graduated college in the late 90s, I thought, what could be better than combining my first love of basketball with this newfound love of performance training? And I decided to become a basketball performance coach. And I did that for just under 20 years before I made the pivot recently to become a corporate keynote speaker.
Did you study in college to become that, or what qualified you for that?
So I actually started out as an elementary ed major. Both of my parents were elementary educators for 30 years, and I thought I wanted to go the teaching and the coaching route. I thought being a basketball coach would be the dream job, but I realized very quickly that I didn't enjoy the teaching part as much as I love the coaching part. And one of the things that I learned from my parents was teaching is not a vocation that you can just mail it in. You know, teaching is something that you need to be in it, you know, heart and soul, or you're cheating the students that you're working with. So I had so much respect for the teaching craft and for future students that I knew that my heart wasn't in it and I had to find a different path. So after my sophomore year, I changed my major from elementary ed to sport management, which allowed me to take half exercise physiology classes and half business classes. So it suited me very well to end up running my own performance training business, which is what I did when I got out of school.
I wish that was my major. I wish I would have majored in that, had some foresight would be coming down the road for me. I tell this story fairly often. I went to the University of Louisville originally as an engineering major. I took a lot of pride that I got into the speed school at U of L, which is you have to qualify to get into. I think it was my first week on campus. Bobby Petrino, our head coach at the time, walks into the weight room and he's beelining right towards me. And that wasn't a comfortable feeling when Bobby no. Petrino was your head coach, but I knew I hadn't done anything wrong. And so I was interested to see what he said. And he walked up to me. Now, granted, I only had one scholarship offer when he asked me this question. He said, Eric, do you want to be an engineer or a football player? And I said, I guess a football player. And he said, okay, go change your major. And so on the spot, I chose political science. I looked up to my grandpa. He was in politics. And so I ended up being a political science major that I want nothing to do with now. So it would have been very beneficial to me exercise science, business, both of those would have served me in my career and what I'm doing now, but that's okay. I'm learning still along the journey.
Oh man, I love that. That's hilarious. And in full transparency, it wasn't part of some master plan that I had. I realized that, you know, having been almost 2 years in to following the elementary ed track, I didn't have a whole lot of options of majors that I could switch to and still graduate relatively on time. So I went and met with my advisor and said, look, what are some majors that most of my current credits will transfer to? And he read a very short list, and sport management was one of them. And I kind of winked at him and said, all right, man, you had me at the word sport. I don't even know what sport management is, but I'll take it, and kind of walked backwards into it. So it was only through hindsight that I realized that it was a perfect major for me, but I definitely didn't know it at the time. My only goal was to graduate in as close to 4 years as I could. Ended up taking one extra semester because I lost a few credits when I changed my major. But yeah, looking back, it was one of the best accidental decisions I ever made.
Yeah, and some of that's probably perspective too. You know, it's... you were being intentional at the time as well, understanding what your passions and interests were. So lucky, but also intentional along the way. So I'll honor you in that way a little bit too. Okay. So we're going to jump around in a few different areas, sure. But since Kobe Bryant passed, and I wish I studied him more when he was alive. And I feel like oftentimes that happens with people in life. They pass and all these people say remarkable words to him, and you wish you had said it to them at the time. You study their life so much more after they pass because they get this moment of significance and everything. And then everyone wants to honor them once they've passed. I wish they would have done it more while Kobe was alive, but I've been fascinated by him. In my downstairs office right outside, I have an autographed picture of Kobe Bryant that I purchased after he passed. It just kind of a reminder as I walk into my downstairs office, like, we're going to bring it today. I loved so much of what he did with his early morning workouts so that he could be back to be there for his kids for breakfast and then get back to the gym or be able to take them to school. And, you know, I probably subscribe to a little bit more sleep than Kobe Bryant does. But I respect the way he handled his business in that manner, still wanted to be there for his family. What were some of your top takeaways, or maybe your top takeaway from your time spent around maybe the most dedicated athlete of all time?
Yeah, you'd be hard pressed to find someone on that level. I mean, the only other name that pops up, you know, of this generation would be a Tom Brady, yep. Who most likely has a very similar approach. I mean, without question, the main lesson I learned from Kobe, I learned back in 2007 when I got to watch one of his early morning workouts. And I remember as a young coach being very surprised that he was focusing on very basic drills. He was focusing on the fundamentals. He was doing very basic pivoting and footwork movements, very basic offensive moves. Now, he was doing them with an unparalleled level of precision and focus and intensity, but the drills themselves were very basic, to the tune of many of the things he was doing I had done with middle school age players. And that really surprised me. You know, it was of my opinion that in 2007, Kobe was the best player in the world. So I expected him to do some things with a little sizzle, a little sexiness, a little flash.
Yeah, maybe practice his fadeaways that he would constantly score on people. Yeah,
exactly. And that's what I was expecting, to see something, you know, really flashy. But he kept drilling down on the basics. And later that day at camp, I was so overwhelmed with curiosity that I asked him, and I said verbatim, you know, Kobe, you're the best player in the world. Why were you doing such basic drills this morning? And he gave me a friendly smile and a wink, but he said in a very serious tone, why do you think I'm the best player in the world? Because I never get bored with the basics. And that was a life-changing moment for me, because it was in that moment that I realized concretely that just because something is basic, it doesn't mean that it's easy. People often misuse those terms as if they're synonyms and use them interchangeably, but they don't mean the same thing. What it takes to be a high performer, what it takes to be successful, what it takes to be fulfilled in any area of your life, whether it's parenthood, being a spouse, being a football player, or being in business, their very basic principles are required. But as we all know, none of those things are easy to execute on a consistent basis. So understanding the difference between basic and easy is a discernment that's really served me well ever since learning that lesson.
Yeah, that's excellent stuff. And so you've worked with some of the most elite in their profession. I'm sure you've spent time around a lot of guys that didn't maybe meet their potential that maybe you saw in them. So for you, What have you seen that separates the elite from the rest of the athletes that may even play professionally, but don't live up to what they could potentially be?
There's probably an exhaustive list of about a dozen characteristics, but in my mind, there's three that stand out. The first we just covered is an immense respect and appreciation for the basics. It's not trying to skip steps. It's not trying to be flashy. It's building a foundation to which everything else is built. And that doesn't mean that you don't eventually graduate to more advanced techniques and drills. It just means you never leave the basics. You know, obviously in football, blocking and tackling and throwing and catching, those are the basics. In basketball, it's your footwork, it's your shooting mechanics, it's your ability to handle the ball. So to be elite in either one of those spaces, you have to work on that stuff relentlessly. The next thing is blending confidence with humility. It's earning the right to be confident through putting in work during the unseen hours. It's getting repetitions. It is earning the right to be confident, but brushing that with a massive stroke of humility to the point that you stay open to coaching, you stay open to feedback, and no matter how good you are, you believe you can still get better. And that was one of the things that separates a Kobe Bryant or a Tom Brady. I mean, we've all deemed them as being the best at what they do, but they still know they can get better. And it's that gap between what they're currently doing and what they believe they're capable of that they obsess over and that drives them. So blending confidence with humility is something that I've seen in basketball and business of high performers. And then lastly, they are maniacally focused on their North Star, their goal of, in Kobe's case, was to be the best to ever play the game, and he'd make no bones about that. But once they've decided on their North Star, and that gives them some clarity and some direction, they don't focus on that. They focus on the process. They focus on the daily behaviors and habits and mindsets and skill sets and micro steps that are needed to achieve that. So Kobe didn't necessarily wake up every morning saying, I'm going to be the best. He's saying, what do I need to do today to inch me a little bit closer to being the best? And learning to be processed focused. It doesn't mean that we don't care about outcomes. It just means that we understand that the best way to achieve outcomes is by learning to love the process. And the best way to achieve that is to take a very holistic approach. So Kobe would understand the fact that every meal I eat takes me a little bit closer to being the best. I'm with you. He probably didn't get near as much sleep as maybe one would recommend, but every workout I do, every rep I do, every shot I take, every minute of film I watch is all going to take me closer to being the best to have ever played the game. And that's where he would put his heart and soul into.
I think the studies say that 1 in 10,000 people can operate on around four hours of sleep, like most need 7 to 8. He was likely one of those people, the way he could recover off of not as much sleep with his 3 a.m. wake ups each and every day. But for all those out there, to recap just a second, because it's so good, focus on the basics. Humility and confidence, and focus on the process. Focus on what you can control. Stacking those daily wins, stacking those wins each and every day, that's what gets you to be an elite performer. It's no crazy formula. Yes, there are certain talent that's required, and we are talking athletics here, but this applies throughout life. It could parenthood. It could be in a great spouse, being a great businessman or woman. This applies across the board. Yes, there's a certain amount of talent that can make you an absolute elite athlete. You know, a Michael Phelps and a runner are different builds. You know, maybe they can't transcend different sports, but be great at what you are called to do. And that's the formula. You should write a book about that. That would make a lot of sense.
You're right on. And I tell you what, two things come to mind with everything you just shared, and that's so insightful. One, as we know, in athletics, there is a physical component, a prerequisite, if you will. In the NBA, it would serve you to be 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", or taller. It doesn't mean you can't make the NBA if you're sub 6 foot, but that would certainly be a benefit. Certainly in football, position specific, there are certain height and weight and strength requirements that are almost essential. But this is why I love these concepts, because once you step outside of the world of professional sports, then the physical component is no longer relevant. You know, to be an elite entrepreneur, to be an elite doctor, to be an elite mom or dad, It doesn't matter your height, your weight, your vertical jump, or how much you bench press, because the physical component no longer matters. Now, I'm a believer that it's still in our best interest to be physically fit, to take care of our bodies, because that will give us better mental acuity and focus. It'll give us higher energy. So I'm not saying completely let yourself go. I'm just saying that the physical part is no longer something that could prevent someone from being an elite level entrepreneur or in business. And something else you said that is really important. Kobe had incredibly high self-awareness, and he knew what worked best for him. And a mistake that I see a lot of people make is they try to emulate someone else, you know, and be a carbon copy. And that's not a great fit for everyone. You know, I believe that everyone should create a morning routine, but I don't believe there is one morning routine that would work well for everyone. You know, Kobe could operate, as you just said so perfectly, on 4 hours sleep. I cannot. Maybe. I'm more in the seven and a half, 8 hours. So I need to make sure that I structure my day accordingly. You know, Kobe was capable of doing 3 2-hour workouts every single day in the off season, which is just an unparalleled amount of work and pounding on the body. Most people don't have that type of tolerance. So I would have younger players when I was in the basketball space come up to me all the time and say, you know, should I be working out 6 hours a day like Kobe? And I would say, probably not. That might not be the best fit for you. So you need to figure out your recipe. And that's what all of us need to do. Well, how much sleep do we need to perform at a high level? What foods do we need to eat to perform at a high level? What is our best morning routine? Like, what's the ideal wake up call or wake up time? I know for me, 20 years ago, I could get up at 4:30 or 5 in the morning and I was ready to rock. Now that I'm a little bit older, it's closer to 6:30 or 7, and I'm okay with that. I don't force myself to get up 2 hours early to try to prove a point or to make a post on Instagram. I allow my body to dictate what I need to do to perform at a high level. And I think that's what's so important, is we can take somebody like a Kobe Bryant or a Tom Brady, and we can learn from them, and we can emulate certain characteristics that they may have, but we should never try to be a carbon copy of anyone else.
It's also individualized. And then having a routine that you're confident in sets you up for success is almost even more important than what the actual action is. I had Anthony Munoz on my podcast, maybe the best offensive lineman of all time. I'm originally from Cincinnati. Anthony was on every commercial. He was and is still the absolute man. The way he treats people still to this day at golf tournaments and charity events that I see him at, I mean, I just absolutely admire this man. And I was asking him about his training routines and everything and what separated him to maybe be the best of all time at what he did. And he talked about distance running. Well, you know, from an exercise science background, that distance running for an offensive lineman would have you shed weight, which is not good. It would pound out your knees. We're too heavy to constantly be pounding our joints. But that gave him a mental edge that he was in better shape than anyone. No one could keep up with him. No defensive lineman should ever be able to beat him, especially in the fourth quarter, because he's better conditioned. And he ran distance every single day to the tune of miles. Like, a recovery would be a couple miles in a day. He might hit 6 or 7 miles in the offseason, and he still does advanced cardio to this day. But that gave him a mental edge, and it served him because he thought it served him, or he was confident it did serve him. And yes, there was probably some physical edge he caught from that, but a lot of it's just mental. So I want to talk about this for a second, because I've heard you talk about setting physical challenges that are maybe 3 to 6 months out for you in your life. And you just talked about the value that physical training can have in your line of work, but for everybody's line of work. Me and Ben Newman always talk about that. No one wants to hear somebody or see somebody, unless you have a very proven track record, show up like they just ate a box of donuts. That would scream a lack of discipline in your life. And then how are you going to tell me? You could be the most disciplined person ever, but just based upon appearance without a track record, you could lose some of the audience. And so Ben is very in tune with his physical appearance because of that. Well, I heard you talk about setting these physical challenges 3 to 6 months out. Give the audience maybe an example of one you do, and then kind of piggybacking off my Anthony Munoz comment, I've had 6 lower body surgeries. I ran a half marathon after I was done playing ball just to prove that a former offensive lineman could do it. And I was maybe going to do a marathon. And my concierge doctor said, absolutely not, Eric. You are going to trash your joints. I know you've lost 60 pounds, but you're still 250 pounds. So give an example of maybe some of the challenges that you've done in your life, and then give me a suggestion for one you recommend for me.
Absolutely. Well, boy, in reverse order, there is so much power to what you just said. It's simply the power of belief. So whether or not long distance running actually provided him an advantage is irrelevant. Right. The belief that it offered him an advantage is all that matters. And that I think speaks to how important belief is in any area of our life. Second, I am also a huge fan of Ben Newman. Ben's become a decent friend over the last several years, someone I had always admired from afar. And he is one of the most disciplined people that I've ever come across. And it radiates in everything that he does. And I love when I hear and see all of our worlds collide by different people that we know. For me, once I left playing collegiate basketball, I needed to satiate my competitiveness and needed to find things that got me excited, something that I wanted to train for. I mean, when you are an athlete, you have something very specific that you're training for. When you leave that and you try and acclimate to being a normal civilian, that's kind of thrown out the window unless you're very specific and strategic about that. So for me, and this has really taken hold over the last several years in particular, I like to put something on my calendar 3 to 6 months out that require me to prepare, that require me to train. Now, I'm not talking to the tune of you know, climbing Mount Everest or anything like that. I'm talking about things that really anybody that would make the decision could choose to sign up for and participate in. And I like to have 2 or 3 of those things on my calendar every year. One, it gives me something to look forward to. Like I like doing physical events. I like things that are challenging. But 2, it helps me get clarity and direction on my actual training and saying, okay, you know, if I'm preparing for a long distance run, then a lot of my training needs to consist of long distance running. If I'm going to prepare for something like a Spartan race or something else, then the training needs to be tweaked accordingly. And I just get some enjoyment out of that. So a few examples just over the last few years, I hiked rim to rim of the Grand Canyon. I did a Spartan 10K race, which for anyone not familiar with Spartan, it's a long distance run, but then you have all of these, I don't even know obstacles. What to call them. Yeah. Obstacles and things from throwing spears to monkey bars, to climbing, you know, crawling under barbed wire. Obstacles is the perfect word. I did a Navy SEAL simulated training experience where for 26 hours, we had some Navy SEALs take us through a very watered down version of what Hell Week would be like. I've done some ultra marathons. I've done a little bit of everything, and I'm actually, I don't know when this will air, but at the time of our recording, I'm doing a 10K and a half marathon down in Disney World this coming weekend on back-to-back days. So it'll be a 6 mile run on Saturday and then a 13, you know, 0.1 mile run on Sunday, which for me is fairly doable. I'm an okay long distance runner, so I didn't need a tremendous amount of preparation for that. But I've been looking forward to it for a while. I think running through Magic Kingdom, you know, in the early morning hours and watching the sunrise will just be a fun experience. So I love trying to leave my comfort zone and do things that are, going to require some preparation and some attention.
I have a couple buddies that will be joining you on that. Well, are you going in costume or are you just in normal running clothes?
I'll just be in my goofy running clothes, which my kids call it a costume because they're short running shorts. They're the long compression socks. And I usually wear a headband. So my kids make fun of me, which I'm totally okay with.
What would be an example of something non-impact that you would recommend in the next year that I try and get on the schedule?
The Navy SEAL event. Absolutely. There was a little bit of running, but it was minimal. I mean, never more than 200 or 300 yards. And even that you could do at a slower pace or even walk if you chose. It was really built on teamwork and the ability to communicate with others, which for me, I didn't know anyone else in the group. I mean, there were 15 of us, random civilians from all over the country. And I had never met anyone prior to that day. So you have to quickly acclimate, get to know somebody, get in a communication rhythm with them. We did some water work in the pool and we did some stuff on the sand and in the beach. And there's stuff where we're, you know, lifting a really heavy log, but it's between the 4 or 5 of us. And it's, it was an incredible experience. And that's something I think you would thrive in, because not only are you a really tremendous athlete, but you're an expert communicator and you understand how to build teams, how to motivate, how to get, like, I think you would enjoy it. I think it would challenge you, but I think you'd be an absolute superstar at it.
Good deal. I appreciate that. And for those that want to hear Alan's top takeaways, he has a podcast talking about over 20 lessons that he wrote down through his experience, and he shares them on a podcast. It's worth your time to go back and listen to that. And it's not that I can't run, and I still play basketball at times. I play pickleball. I walk golf courses, which I understand is not an impact. I'm active. I just can't do the training that would be required, or I can. It would be terrible for my long-term fitness goals and wanting to be active if I train for an Ironman per se. Yeah. And took all of that pounding. All right.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things I find interesting about the Navy SEAL experience was there's so many different activities and challenges that innately there'll be some that we're pretty good at, and we need to be able to offer help to those on our team that aren't. And then there's some that maybe we're not as good at, and we need to be able to be open to receiving some help. I mean, you know, there was, and I certainly would never generalize or stereotype, but there was one former college football player there. I mean, this guy was really big and really put together. But he admittedly struggled in the pool, and he struggled in the water stuff. That was foreign to him. He had not done very much swimming in his life. So that was really challenging for him. So we all had to kind of to work together to try to help him get through that. Then when we got outside and it was time to lift heavy logs and heavy objects, he was an absolute rock star. And many of us were struggling with those parts. And then he would be the one to try and help us and maybe carry more than his own weight in order to make it a little bit easier for us. So that was one of my favorite parts. And that really is the definition of a team, is everybody try and figure out what their strengths are and where they can make a maximum contribution to the group. And if everybody's willing to do that, then all of the puzzle pieces kind of fit together seamlessly. So it was a neat experience, to say the least.
Yeah, that's cool. All right. So when you've worked with so many athletes that even if you're not coaching them through their transition out of sport, I know that you've experienced a lot of athletes that have transitioned out of sports. What is maybe the biggest challenge or common challenges that you see from those athletes transitioning out of sport? Because I say that when you're a professional athlete, it is very similar to when you retire from the business world. When you make a career pivot, it often applies to everybody.
Well, first and foremost, I think you have the blueprint, because you have done such a brilliant job of transitioning from sport to the next phase of your life. And it's something I just have so much respect and reverence for the way you've handled that. It's been my experience that the biggest challenge is loss of identity. Mm-hmm. That for the most part, most athletes, and I know I was victim of this as well, they identify with being a basketball player or being a football player. And they don't quite understand the difference between basketball is what I do. It's not who I am. And that is a very, very important distinction to be able to make. And I get it. I mean, you know, if you fall in love with the sport really young and you play it your entire life up until your early 20s, it's really all that you know. And it's the reason that most people know you. I mean, they associate you with being that athlete. So I think figuring out who you are and having the awareness to figure out who you are at your core is really essential. And that is a process that takes self-awareness. It takes emotional intelligence. It takes the ability to be reflective, introspective, but it certainly takes some vulnerability and some courage to step away from a label that you've put on yourself for, at this point, almost your entire life, and to say, okay, I'm going to do something else now. But once you can flip that switch and say, you know, the game of football was really, really good to me. And whether or not you choose to stay close to that game is up to each individual, but then you need to have a new purpose, and you need to figure out, what am I going to do in this next phase? That can be challenging, but it's been my experience. Those that do that well, it's enlightening and liberating, to say the least.
Well, first off, thank you for your compliment on my transition. I just say, you know, I'm going on 5 years now, and it's just a constant learning process, and that's okay. Life is a constant learning process. I want to be a lifelong learner. I want to be learning up until the day I die. So the fact that I, at times, don't have it all figured out, I don't beat myself up about. I am constantly learning, and I am being intentional about it. You talk about identity, and Man, and we talked about it on your podcast, but I would have always told you, you know, it was faith and family, then football. Well, when football's taken away, you realize that maybe it wasn't quite in that order. And, you know, so much of my identity was wrapped into football, and I still am around the broadcast world and in sports media. And that's because I love the game of football, but I've had to work so much, and so much of it's detailed in my book and how you transition on core values and vision and examining your gifts and using them to ultimately bring value to others, because that's going to bring you fulfillment in life. And not how do I out earn the contracts I was making in the NFL, but how do I make this next chapter more fulfilling? Because then it's not the guy who says high school were the best days of my life, or the woman that says college was the best days of my life with my sorority sisters. No, life has so much more fulfillment out there that you can chase if you're willing to put the time and intention into it. But okay, so that being said, you switched, maybe not fully, but into a more keynote speaking role now, as opposed to performance coaching. So a career shift yourself. And so what led you to shift to more keynote speaking?
I started to get burnt out on being in the performance space. I started to realize, and I realized in the beginning of our conversation, I planted the seed in saying that I grew up understanding that teaching was a vocation that you have to be all in for. It is not fair to those that you work with to mail it in. Well, I very much view teaching and coaching as almost being synonymous in that regard. I don't believe someone should be in coaching for any reason other than they want to pour into the people that they work with. They embrace the leadership role of helping people achieve their dreams and helping teams accomplish something collectively. So when I started to feel rapidly approaching burnout and just wasn't enjoying being in the gym or being in the weight room as much as I had years prior, I knew it was time to make a shift. And it was actually a pretty acute epiphanal moment. I was in Germany speaking at a basketball event. And I remember right before I took the court, and I'm all mic'd up and I'm going to share with coaches from all over Europe some training protocols. And I just remember I wasn't that excited to do it. And that felt very foreign to me, because before, those things would light me up. I'd be so excited, like chomping at the bit to get out and share. And I just didn't feel excited. And that's when a major red flag went off in my head that I need to make a change. And I made that change pretty rapidly because I could feel the burnout was approaching. And it was one of the best decisions that I've made, was leaving the game that had been so good to me and the craft that I had enjoyed immensely, but then taking those skill sets and those strategies and principles of high utility and learning to refocus them in a different direction. And when I gave my very first keynote talk, it was an unpaid engagement, but boy, I felt so alive. I mean, I felt electric on that stage. And as soon as I stepped off that stage, it cemented the fact that this is the path that I need to be on now. And I knew that I had made the right choice.
Yeah. And you've earned the right to be on that stage now. Had you not done the performance coaching and working with these high level athletes, then maybe you don't catch their ears as quickly. Your communication skills, your points ultimately would have, but there's people love athletics. We live in America and around the world, people love athletics. Here it's football, then basketball, whatever. Overseas, it's more soccer, but people love athletics. If you were doing a talk over in Europe and you said you worked with Ronaldo or whoever, that would bring some attention to you. And so you've earned that platform now, and then you get to impact because of that platform that you've created. So, you know, that even though you experienced that time of burnout, and you talk about that in your new book, Sustain Your Game, and it's the stress, the stagnation, and then burnout is addressed. And so check that out in there. I'll let the listeners check out the book, and I won't have you spill the secret sauce there. But okay, so I've heard you say before that people develop confidence through routines. We talked about how morning routines in particular can be valuable, but they should be individualized. And I've heard you speak with Heather Monahan's a comedian. Heather Monahan, performance coach, top 50 keynote speaker in the world. She was just on the podcast and she talked about how she has no morning routine. And I said, well, that in itself is a routine. The fact that you rush out the door to take your son to school, that in itself is a routine. And so when you coach people or you're giving advice to others on how they set up a routine that sets them up for success, what are you giving them?
Well, the first thing, and I believe is ground zero for everyone, is having the self-awareness to know how you operate best. And for some people, that in and of itself is an exercise, because they might not know how they operate best. I think guys like you and I who have been around athletics, we're almost forced to figure that out. You know, we have a game on this day at this time, and it is my obligation and my responsibility to the team to show up as my best self for that game, because that's what everybody on the team is doing. So you intrinsically start to figure out how much sleep you need, what food you need to eat, you know, maybe what stretches you need to do. And then, of course, we've always been very fortunate to have coaches in our lives to help mentor and give us some of that framework. But yeah, outside of that, you need to be able to come up or have the level of awareness to know what are your preferences. See, I absolutely crave structure. I love routine. I love structure. I love consistency. But I also understand that not everyone has the same affinity for those things, Heather being a perfect example. Too much structure and too much consistency in routine would probably make her feel very smothered and claustrophobic. She probably prefers to be a little bit more spontaneous. And that's okay. Neither one of these frameworks is right or wrong, good or bad. We just need to figure that out. And, you know, for me, I like knowing almost to the minute how I'm going to spend the first 30 minutes of my day tomorrow with a morning routine. But someone like Heather might just put some loose guardrails up and say, you know, I'd like to do a little meditation. I'd like to enjoy my coffee and some stillness. Anything else that happens is just going to happen. And that's fine. So I think we need to have the introspection to figure out our preferences. And then a lot of it, to be honest, is just some trial and error. One of the oldest adages, it always makes me giggle because it sounds so obvious, but many people ignore it, is that the key to happiness and high performance and fulfillment is to do more of what works and do less of what doesn't. And I love that because of its simplicity. Well, yeah, you have to get some reps to figure out what works and figure out what doesn't. And if you say, you know, when I go to bed at 10 o'clock at night and I get up at 6, I tend to feel more refreshed than when I go to bed at midnight and I get up at 8. Okay, well, make a note of that. And now you can start to hone down when's an ideal bedtime or wake up time. You know, I notice that if I eat this certain food at this certain time, I have more energy, or coffee or no coffee, meditation or no meditation, whatever it may be, but figure that out and then pay attention to it. And one of the best things you can do is try and figure out a time where you just felt you were on fire. You were in the zone. You were mentally sharp. You were focused. You had high energy. And then work backwards and say, what did I do for the 24 hours before that? And do that a few times. And I bet you'll start to notice some trends. Similarly, if you say, when's a time that I've just not felt very good? I felt low energy. I couldn't focus. I just felt lousy. And same thing, see where you drop the breadcrumbs, and I bet you there's some patterns, and then start to look for those trends. And then slowly over time, you can piece together both an evening and a morning routine, and that will continue to tweak. My morning routine today is not identical to what it was 2 years ago. The big rocks are still the same and are still in place, but there's some nuanced differences that I've made. One of the things, and this is certainly not a commercial for them because I'm not endorsed by them, but I recently got the Oura Ring, which I don't know if you're familiar with. And it helps track your sleep, your readiness and your preparedness. It tracks your heart rate. I've only had it for a couple of weeks, but it's been really valuable for me in tweaking when I need to go to bed, when I need to go up, on what days I have the most energy that I should do a really hard workout, and what days do my body and mind need a little bit more recovery. And either I don't work out that day, take a planned day off, or I do something a little less intense. But this thing has been an absolute game changer just in the last few weeks.
Let's take a moment for one of our sponsors. The daily vitamins and supplements I've been using for optimization each and every day are those from BrainMD. Go to brainmd.com and use code ERIC15 at checkout for 15% off. Yeah, I'm with you. I wear the Whoop band for those watching on YouTube. They're tracking devices and they can be very valuable. The funny thing is, when I was playing, I ended up scrapping the Whoop band. Now my fingers, from being jammed, broken, and me being a big dude, the Oura Ring does not go up to a big enough size for me. I've heard some people say that they preferred that. Other people prefer the Whoop band, whatever it may be. My fingers are too big for the Oura Ring, so my decision was made for me. But when I was playing, this is right when Whoop came out, and they sent everyone that was interested and one on our team one to try out. And I really liked it at first until I think it was even before a game day, maybe a Thursday practice, a pretty big practice day in the NFL. And I had a terrible recovery score. Well, I was still going to practice that day. I was still going to take the same amount of reps. I still had to get a workout in the morning. I still had to rehab, and I still had to function at meetings at a high level. And I'm the center. I'm making all the calls, and people relied on me. I was a captain of the team. When I realized that it didn't really matter. So I wanted that feedback, but it also, I have to show up today no matter what.
True.
And so I scrapped it. I scrapped it. But now on a day-to-day basis, when I can adjust my workouts, I can adjust my sleep, my eating patterns, whatever it may be, now I abide by it a lot more. And I'm not saying professional athletes shouldn't use it, but I never would. Once I got that bad recovery score on a Thursday, there was no way I was going to let that happen on a Sunday and give my brain any inkling that I wasn't 100%, because it's a 0 to 100 score. And so on game day, I'm 100. I don't care what my sleep or anything else dictated. I'm 100. I don't care. And so it's just funny when you talk about those tracking devices, how I'm so much more into them now than when I played. But when I played, I was taking mental and actual tangible notes on, hey, this diet, nutrition, sleep, preparation, even this much film, this worked for me this week. I'm going to continue to do it because that sets me up for success, to your point.
Oh,
and figuring out how you're going to live the ideal version of yourself. And so you don't have to get too deep into the woods on it, but in my morning and evening routine changes constantly, which I detailed some of it in my book, which is now a little bit different than even when that was written a year ago and just got published on October 12th. And so that being said, what's the first maybe 30 or 60 minutes of your day look like?
Well, I, first of all, so much insight into what you just shared there. And the way that I choose to use any of these types of wearable technologies, one of my foundational perspectives on life is I just try to view all feedback as merely sterile information. I do the best I can not to attach a label of good or bad or right or wrong to anything. You know, even if someone gives me some feedback after one of my keynotes, I do my best to depersonalize it and not take it as either praise or criticism, but try to look at it through.
And because that was one person too.
Exactly. Yeah. And even with this, like you said, I just look at it as information. So if it says this morning, my readiness score is in the low 70s, you know, which is not ideal. I don't necessarily let it change the way I'm going to approach my day. I just use it as information. And then I say, okay, did I do anything differently in the last 24 hours that maybe undermined my ability to get restful sleep or, you know, whatever it may be, but I don't take any of the stuff personal. I just chalk it all up as feedback, and I'm going to look at it and then decide how best to use it. And I think the more open we can stay to different types of feedback, it just gives us a variety of vantage points and perspectives. But yeah, I'm with you. And, you know, I mean, my only reason for being here today with you, aside from having a great conversation, is to add value to your listeners. And I take that very seriously. So yeah, no matter what my Aura Ring said, my goal is to show up as my best self and over-deliver for you. And I would never let, you know, the feedback of a ring put me in a mindset that would not allow me to do that. So yeah, it's just feedback. To your original question of my morning routine, for the most part, every single morning, my goal is to involve my mind, my body, and my heart before I get into the workday. You know, before I check emails or check social media, I want to do something that gets me thinking, whether that's listening to a podcast or watching an educational video or reading a book. Can't wait to read yours, by the way. Or if that is something to connect me emotionally, watch something or listening to something inspirational, have a conversation with somebody that's meaningful in my life, and get my body moving. Whether that's a structured workout, like an 8-mile run or a strength workout, or maybe it's just some light yoga poses and some stretching, but I want to get all of my faculties going and primed before I start to tackle the day. And every day is a little bit different. You know, some days I have a series of calls and interviews like this, and I know that I'll be spending a good deal of time in my office staring at a webcam. Other days I'm traveling, I'm speaking. So every day is slightly different, but those are kind of the big rocks that I try to make sure I put in place. And I'm far from perfect. I'm fallible and flawed just like every human being, but I'm pretty consistent with that. And because I love consistency, I feel differently when I don't do those things. If for some reason I'm a little thrown off my morning routine, I usually feel it at some point. So I'm pretty maniacal about sticking to it.
I'm with you 100%. I love routine. I love consistency as well. And I'm very much on the same page as you. And the reading changes, the workouts change constantly, the cold exposure, the gratitude journal, it all changes. Now, I will say I spend 10 minutes in the Word each morning, in the Word of God, in the Bible. Now, that can look like a devotional. Sometimes it looks like the Glorify app in my car, but I'm giving 10 minutes in the morning. And then beyond that, it's a little bit of silence or prayer, but it's those staples, but they constantly change because although I love routine and consistency, I also love the spice of life to mix it up. I'm not going to read the same things over and over. I'm not going to do the exact same workouts over and over. All right. I have a few recurring questions and I'm going to be respectful of your time here today, but besides your own, do you have a favorite book?
One of the books that changed my entire outlook on leadership and team building, and I'm admittedly a huge Coach K fan, was one of his first books called Leading with the Heart. And I read that, I think it came out in the early 2000s. And it was just a game changer for me personally on how to approach leadership and impact and influence and how to build teams. That was one from 20 years ago. One of the more recent ones, which I'm sure most of your listeners have already read because he sold like 6 million copies, is Atomic Habits by James Clear, which is just is phenomenal. You know, most of what I talk, teach, and preach about habits, I have learned from James. I've been a longtime loyal follower of his and really enjoy his newsletter. And when that book came out, I read it cover to cover. I bought the audiobook and listened to it. And then I went back and read the book again, all within about a 6-month period. And that one is really helpful.
That's funny you say that. I've read the book and currently I had some Audible credits built up. And so I bought that one and started on a plane and I was actually listening to it on in the car on my way to and from a meeting this morning. That's ironic timing. What role does your faith play in your life?
So I'm not particularly faith-based. And this, we could do an entire podcast episode on this because I think it would be a fascinating one. I have a lot of unanswered questions when it comes to faith, and it's been something that I've been having some introspective and looking at from a variety of angles for several years. I did not grow up in a faith-based family, so I know that was part of it, but I have a lot of questions. Now, I have faith in love. I have faith in humanity. I have faith in a lot of areas of life, but not necessarily in a higher power, but I'm incredibly open. And that's, to me, being curious and being open are words that I hope will always describe me. I never want to have the conviction that I have the answer and that you can put me or my beliefs under museum glass because they're going to constantly change. And that part, I actually enjoy that. And that's why, and I know many of the friends that you and I share are very heavily faith-based. And I love that about them. I love that about you. I love the conversations that we've been able to have. And I'm also incredibly grateful that folks are respectful of the fact that I am kind of out there when it comes to that.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I appreciate the fact that you're seeking answers. And I would just encourage you to continue to dig in on that because I was at that exact same point in my life 10 to 12 years ago. So that would be my encouragement to you.
Well, thank you.
What's your favorite restaurant?
Oh boy. I love sushi and I love pizza. So it would
we get along better than I thought.
It would be one derivative of them for sure. One thing for me about food is I'm a little bit of a foodie and a snob where I like really high quality food. So if, you know, my goal is to eat pretty clean 80 to 90% of the time, then the other 10 to 20%, I want to enjoy life. But if I'm going to enjoy a pizza or a burger and fries, you know, I don't have any interest in going to McDonald's or Domino's. I want to eat a really high quality burger and fries or pizza. Sushi is one of my favorite. And I tend to do more of it when I'm in heavy training mode, you know, because of the high carbs of the rice. Those are two genres. As far as restaurants, I've got a few of my go-tos here. And I probably Uber Eats way more than one should because I love the convenience. You know, there's a few things I never mind splurging on. One is travel. I like to travel in style. And the other is convenience. I don't mind paying a few extra dollars to make my life easier and more convenient. I work really hard for my money, and I'm almost a minimalist by definition. I don't have very many tangible things, and that's by design. I don't need a lot of stuff, but those are two things that I'll always spend my money on, is travel and convenience.
When David Nurse and Jordan Montgomery originally connected us, I don't know if they were doing it because they knew that we would get along and work well on podcasts, or if we'd be fast friends in other ways. I always say I like to spend money on convenience and experience. You can't buy back time, and ultimately we're going to have our experiences. A lot of experience for us is travel.
Yeah.
And then convenience, like it pains me. I used to work 40 hours a week at a cemetery cutting grass in high school, in between school and workouts and everything else. My kids will ask me if I know how to cut the grass now. I'm like, you don't understand. I've cut the grass most people do in their entire life. I just don't choose to do it anymore because my time's more. I'd rather spend time with you guys than I would doing yard work. It is what it is. I'm going to spend money for that. And then I am an avid sushi fan. And I'm also like you. So I always tell people say, how do you keep the weight off? And I say, 80-90% rule. And they're like, what's your 80-90%? I'm like, clean carbs, especially if I'm training hard, lean protein, fruits and veggies. It's pretty simple. I try not to drink my calories as much as possible during that 80-90%. And then that 10-20%, look, I travel with the Bills every week calling games. When I'm in Buffalo, you want to talk about the best pizza and wings in the country? It's unbelievable. Then I'm in a different city every week. When I'm in Kansas City, I want to eat barbecue. And so, but when you have discipline in your life, 80-90% of the time, you can give yourself some grace to go out and have a beer, eat some pizza, whatever it may be. And you're not going to look it as much, I'll say.
Oh man, that's such a great perspective. And that is definitely one of the reasons I think David and Jordan connected us. That's such a healthy approach, because we want to, when we decide to be in that, play in that 10 to 20% space, we need to do it guilt-free. There's no sense in eating some pizza if it's going to make you feel bad afterwards. So for me, I say, you know what? I ate clean this entire week. I had a couple of great workouts, and now I'm going to enjoy going out with Eric and having some pizza, or having a cocktail, or having some sushi, whatever it may be. And I think that's a very healthy balance to that approach. And yeah, and all of this still boils down to self-awareness. You know, my parents, I love my parents immensely. They are incredibly frugal people. You know, my parents are in their mid 70s, and I can promise you they have never used a valet in their entire life. My dad would rather park and walk 15 miles to the restaurant than to valet. Whereas that's how I'd prefer to spend $20, is to just pull right up front and walk right into the restaurant. So, you know, when I tell him I went out to a nice dinner with a friend and it was a $250 bill, he almost has, you know, a heart palpitations, because to him, that is just absurd. So I say that because if I tried to take my parents out to a really nice dinner or send them on a really nice vacation, they wouldn't even enjoy themselves because they'd feel so guilty. So I've learned not to worry about that. When I go home and visit my parents, I know we're going to put on our nicest polos and we're going to go to Outback for a $9 steak, because that's what makes them happy and that's what makes them feel good. So I just think it's important that we know that about ourselves and about our loved ones, on how we operate best.
Oh, my dad is the exact same way, like to a T. All right, last one for me. This is what's next with Eric Wood. What's next for Allen Stein Jr.?
So I have two things on the horizon, and these are kind of North Stars that I use to shape the decisions I make. One is, as a keynote speaker, I have the goal of being in the $1 million club, which is making $1 million in speaking revenue in one calendar year, which for anyone that's not mathematically inclined will break down to 50 engagements at $20,000 each. And at present, I'm guessing I'm about 2 years away from that. You know, if I can keep progressing and growing and building my business, I've set that goal for 2025. Possibly could reach it in 2024. And it's, the money part is irrelevant. I'm not worried about the money. I live a very comfortable lifestyle. I live below my means and I make really good money. To me, it's more of the, it's been my experience that outside of a celebrity, anyone that is in the $1 million speaking club is pretty good at their craft. They're captivating on stage. They have good content. They're easy to work with. They have built up a reputation of being really good at what they do. And that is a North Star for me. I love my craft and I want to be really good at it. That's one. And then the second is I'm working on a third book. Haven't quite figured out the exact title or theme or direction, but I'm in the process now of doing brain dumps and compiling a lot of information and a lot of things I've learned since the previous two books to start providing some direction. So my goal is to spend most of 2023 writing it and then hopefully have that out in 2024. So 2024, 2025 are where two of these North Stars will come to fruition if I can continue to stay disciplined and progress and keep learning.
Absolutely. And I know that you know the process goals to get you to those markers and you'll stay loyal to those, which gets you to that end product goal, that long-term vision goal out there. So, man, Alan, this was an absolute pleasure. I know that I learned a lot here today. I was impacted from the conversation, so the listeners surely were as well. If you want to see more about Alan, he's on Instagram at Alan Stein Jr., correct?
Yep, that's correct.
And then his podcast is Raise Your Game. It's really cool. They go through different themes each year and different seasons. So you get a good amount of variety, but it's all Alan and his principles. And then his books are Raise Your Game. And his newest book is Sustain Your Game. Those are excellent. I suggest everyone go out there, buy you a copy and read it. Alan, thank you so much for the time here today, brother.
Oh, my pleasure, man. I enjoy learning from you. I look forward to devouring your book and sharing it with my audience, and look forward to grabbing either some pizza, sushi, or maybe both one time when we're in the same city.
Absolutely, brother. Thanks for tuning in to this episode, presented as always by Punched Energy Chews. If you haven't already, please leave a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Share it on social media as well, and we will share it too. I would also love it if you could pre-order my book, Tackle What's Next. It's on Amazon, and the link to do that is in the show notes. Let's keep making our what's next in life our best yet.